Welcome to the AI and Faith podcast. We are a community of expert technologists, professionals, and faith leaders bringing the ancient wisdom of the world's major religions to the ethics of artificial intelligence. Join us on this new journey and welcome to the conversation.
When I see AI, man, I see it in that light, right? I see it in this massive shared hope of a beautiful future where regardless of our backgrounds, we can flourish. And I think that can happen among our nonprofits, it can happen in our churches, it can happen in our families. And so when I see artificial intelligence, I see it in the light of Afrofuturist thought. I see it in the light of really womanish thought, right? I see it in the light of this ability to take anything and it be baptized for the good of God's people, regardless of their background, their gender, their socioeconomic status, not for human exploitation, but for the sake of human flourishing.
Hello, and welcome to the AI and Faith podcast on integrating AI into the local church here with Reverend Dr. Justin Lester. My name is Dan Heck, and today I'm excited to share my interview with Dr. Lester with you. He is a deep and a broad thinker and practitioner who is engaging with AI in his church context in cutting-edge ways. He pastors Friendship Vallejo Church, located in the heart of Vallejo, California, and teaches in a variety of academic and church settings. We're also grateful to have him as a fellow here at AI and Faith. Thank you for joining our far-ranging discussion about his faith journey and how he sees the role of AI in the church.
How would you describe your own faith?
So the way that I think through that, man, is I always joke when it comes to like the sermon series, like when I make fun of bad preaching, but then it's how I describe my faith, and it's faith is fun, fickle, and even like more fun. I don't know, but it's like, it's so much fun to just trust God in a way, trust the divine movement of God when it seems like it's like you're wandering and it's blind, but yet it's so much fun. And then yet there are times where it gets fickle or it's just frustrating, where it's just like, what is this? What am I doing? Why am I following God? Why am I doing this? Because I can't see. And then it gets more fun where God begins to reveal favor and grace and mercy and to use us in ways that makes absolutely no sense. That's how I put it, man. It's just, it's fun, it's fickle, and it's even more fun. God has a very curious way of being God. And so just trusting God at his word, following through has opened up amazing things in my life, has opened up, allowed me to share the gospel. And so it's just, it's a journey, but it's so fun, if you will, to just trust blindly and then see that trust man pays off.
Thank you. I love that so much. One other sort of spiritual influence is Saint Francis, and that Franciscan joy is part of what I feel when you're saying fun, and that's the sense I make of it at least. So I'd love to hear more of your story on how you got to where you are. What brought you to Jesus, having a fun, fickle, and even more fun faith?
I met Jesus for the first time at 12. I'm in the Protestant tradition, faith, Protestant tradition, practicing Baptist. So I've been I always joke, Baptist born, Baptist bred. When I die, I'll be a Baptist dead. And so I've grown up in the Baptist church my entire life. I was a PK. I met Christ for the first time at 12, man. And my goal from there was to disciple, you know, just to share the love of Christ. And so I acknowledged a call into the ministry at the end of my high school journey, but I said that is the last thing I'm going to do. And then God's had other plans for me. And so I went to Marquette University where I grew and I took classes in theology. Where, as you mentioned, Franciscan joy. Yeah, St. Francis, St. Thomas, man, we had statues on Marquette's campus. And so, you know, I grew there a lot in my faith journey. And then I got open the door for me to go to Vanderbilt University to put some flesh on my divinity degree there, and then finished at Boston. And on the course of that journey, man, God gave me some great relationships, revelation, evolving of where I'm gifted. And one of the areas where this intersection comes in was when I was at Marquette, following through on my initial call in the ministry, I was just enamored with, at the time, UX research wasn't like as big as it is now, especially at Marquette, where their engineering program was still evolving. And so I was in marketing and public relations and taking a bunch of classes on user research and user experience. And I thought it was so interesting to play around with, like, this is interesting, this is cool, qualitative data, quantitative research. And how do we use that in our church spaces? And how do we use this to build the body of Christ? And I was attending predominantly African-American churches. They were mid-sized African-American churches. You know, they weren't large, but churches where we had a lot of events, but not a lot of follow through and follow up. And I began to wonder, what does data-driven work look like in faith spaces? And that's where, for me, man, a lot of prayer and fasting came into my master's thesis, and then eventually my dissertation, my first master's, second master's, and dissertation. And on this journey, man, God's been so faithful, where it's just been really cool to see how nothing is a surprise to God, and where my theology, man, has really evolved from being very staunch and conservative to very open and fluid to understand the different ways in which God will reveal God's self, showcase God's self, and then use us to be his hands and feet. And so started at 12. I said yes in a church, and it's continuing, man, when I'm in California to, you know, get a chance to serve some of God's favorite people here in Vallejo.
How did the UX piece get integrated into your master's or dissertation work? Or did it, was it more background, or did it?
No, I'll actually speak to that, man. So my master's thesis was called Trifling Triplicity, and it built upon Du Bois's double consciousness. So Du Bois argued in Souls of Black Folk that whole notion of two-ness, right? What it means to be Black and white America. And so I believe that social media came along and created this third layer, this third mask, if you will, for Black and brown bodies, namely Black men. And how, as ministers of the gospel, we have to minister to people through these different lenses. So now here's this marketing lens, where how do we understand our people? How do we understand what it means not only to be Black in a traditionally white America, in a general white America, but then also how do we navigate through a culture that's been built upon the backs of Black bodies, right? How do we navigate through a culture in social media, whether it's dances, whether it's the men dressing up as women, women dressing up as men, whether it's relational, whether it's, but it's all based upon this Black innovative culture. And how do we as pastors and as leaders navigate through that? So then user research for me became the way that I did, found data in terms of the data on African-American churches, the data on traditional worship experiences. How do we renew churches? What are our actual numbers? What is the information? Like, what are people actually growing in? What do they know? What do they not know? What are they desiring to know? What translations of scripture fit the most? And it's amazing to see how much slavery and civil rights movement really influence and impair Black religious environments. And that's where, you know, user research for me was really important to then think about how we showcase our churches on websites, how we showcase our churches on social media. And so that's where a lot of my work when I was in college, just as side jobs, was building things for Black churches, building apps for Black churches. And it was just basic stuff, but like building things to engage people, figuring out like what needs to go on homepages and what needs to go on social media, and what words we use and how we reach, especially at the time, my generation was in our 20s. And so how do we reach the lost generation? Then was millennials, now the lost generation, Gen Z, which is a whole nother conversation. But how we reach those generations and how we engage them and not just reaching. Because I think what happened in that case was we got so consumed on marketing, but not evangelism. So we reached them, but then we didn't know how to teach them. And so that was where, how do we engage in terms of reaching people with the gospel, and then teaching the gospel? And that's when it got to a much deeper level that a lot of our churches have really good experiences, but do not know how to share our faith, what we stand for, and how we communicate the gospel. So user research, man, not only helped me in terms of reaching and marketing people, but also helping churches evaluate their culture, which led to why I got so involved in and interested in gamification and artificial intelligence in my doctoral work.
Especially drawing from that background, how would you describe your perspective on AI and its interactions with faith?
To me, man, I think nothing is a surprise to God. And I get pushback on that when I talk to people, but I don't believe God was in heaven like, oh my God, I forgot that I blessed someone with the ability to see things in this way and, you know, unveil artificial intelligence. My perspective on AI, man, and faith, and one of the brown bag lunches we had, maybe we begin to think about this for eternity, but I think it's a beautiful way to open up the opportunity for the creative ingenuity of God's people, right? That we have such a creative juice, if you will, that that we are tech, and now to delocate that and centralize it for people to access our thoughts, for people to have access to creativity, for people to begin to think beyond, you know, just normal day-to-day living. So like just paying bills, waking up, going to sleep, but to begin to think about whether it's generative AI and the creation of things, whether it's enterprise AI for, you know, automating and growing organizations, or whether it's just generalized artificial intelligence, just the research and theory behind it to find something and to fine tune how AI helps us, you know, simply get our, you know, wake up in the morning to find out what the weather is, down to helping turn lights on and turn lights off and telling us what the best temperature is for us to move forward to help people in medicine. It's just interesting to see. And so for me too, my perspective, it only speaks to a faith tradition in terms of how we, what this is, but also, man, how we share the gospel, how we can assist in research and follow up and automation and sustainability for organizations, especially churches that are small. You know, most churches are under 80 people on Sunday morning. Like most churches are not seeing a lot of people. And yet they have to have impact on a whole community, and so how it impacts them. And so I love the equitable nature for human flourishing when it comes to artificial intelligence. And then lastly, you know, it's just fun at the end of the day. Like, it's just, my son is 7. And so while I grew up on a cell phone, I was playing Snake at his age. Right. My son is growing up making fun of his dad, who goes around calling himself that tech pastor, you know? And so it's so interesting to see how my son has a Apple intelligence on his cell phone, you know? And I'm over here like, when I was your age, I played Snake and listened to Walkman. And he's over here telling Siri, asking Siri what to wear today and helping him pick out the best clothes. And so it's just, I have a really weird viewpoint of it because I see the future with my child. I also see the present with senior citizens who are just learning how to use their computer. And I also see, for me, the work that I've done on gamifying organizations and renewing organizations, how important it is to have multiple people on your team, have people who are helping you think, have people who are helping you be creative. And that if you're going to grow your organization, getting beyond the God aspect, if you're going to grow your organization in the world, there's that notion of segmentation versus differentiation, right? And that you need something that's going to make you different. AI helps us think, right? Helps us open our eyes to something that we may not have ever seen, to automate, to follow up, and to be different. So we're not just a bunch of, you know, homogenous organizations and churches. But because I always joke, like I tell pastors, I'm like, you can throw a rock to any Black church and the services look almost the same. I said, so we got to do something that makes us different. Like, we all sing the same songs, we dress the same way, we shout at the same time. I said, so how can we differentiate ourselves? And I think AI helps us find the creative juice inside of our churches and inside of our faith communities, man, that can help train people, teach people, and grow churches. And I know, that's what I really love about this. And even though I talk to pastors, man, like in the back of my book, I know on the Church of AI, in the back of the book, I give an FAQ. And I asked about 20 different pastors to ask me one question. And it's amazing the stuff they talked about, like job replacement and ethics, and is it demonic? You know, all these simple questions that have nothing, that's not going to slow down the work of AI. Rather, it's showing the barriers that we've created that frankly don't exist to engaging with artificial intelligence. So it's been a fun journey, but I enjoy it because I think we really can spread the gospel in ways we've never seen before.
I love this vision of using this technology to help differentiate and express ourselves more. And I think that it's certainly possible and a hopeful vision. And it mm-hmm. strikes me how much of what we do starts to seem more robotic in the face of the way this technology can actually be less robotic than we end up being, right? Because we get locked into certain routines, all people groups do.
Well, I think one of the frustrating parts too, man, and where I disagree in some of the stuff I'm reading, is we're trying to make everything human, where I think it needs, in some essence, in some aspects, it needs to stay artificial, right? So like, we're trying to make humanoid robots. We've got, like, you know, ChatGPT's AVN, and everything's so, you know, fluid and responding and emotional. And I think, you know, as much as we want to delocate some things, I think some things, in order to open our minds, need to be decentralized so we don't mistake humanity, you know, so that we can flourish. So I agree. Yeah. But that also speaks, man, I know we're going to talk about Thurman, but it speaks to Black liberation in general. Like, one of the big things is this shared vision for the future, right? Where all people, regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic status, and background, have an opportunity to engage in the future. And that speaks to, like, where my work with Thurman speaks to more like Afrofuturism, right? And like how it's this disembodied, ambiguous Blackness. And this disembodied Blackness, man, gives us a chance to just have a hope for a future where that's where you get Black Panther, this vibranium, where you get Luke Cage, this chest that can stop any bullet. And when I see AI, man, I see it in that light, right? I see it in this massive shared hope of a beautiful future where, regardless of our backgrounds, we can flourish. And I think that can happen among our nonprofits. It can happen in our churches. It can happen in our families. And so when I see artificial intelligence, I see it in the light of Afrofuturist thought. I see it in the light of really womanish thought, right? I see it in the light of this ability to take anything and it be baptized for the good of God's people, regardless of their background, their gender, their socioeconomic status, not for human exploitation, but for the sake of human flourishing.
There's so much richness there. And you're describing the disembodied Blackness. And in the context of Thurman, it makes me think about Thurman's work on spirituals. And how he was, I mean, it was meaningful for him. And he also was hesitant about being pegged as the guy who's doing the Black stuff. And he wanted to also be able to be a theologian, just as a theologian, in addition to identifying a social location. And that's, I guess, a double or a triple bind once you get up to social media personas as well.
Yeah, man. And that's where too, like, so Du Bois, you know, I wonder what the conversations would have been like with Du Bois and Thurman, but Du Bois looked at like the, I guess that mass, well, huge too, but that mass. And I think social media adds another one. And so like, we're constantly fighting through to get to our authentic selves, and that we can't flourish till we get to that authentic selves. And I think social media in its best practice and thought wanted people to be at their best selves. And I think AI, we have to look at it with that type of shared vision of the best of God's people, the best of ourselves. Like, so I love AI agents right now. And I love this movement of cloning ourselves. Like I will clone. I love this movement of trying to dive into the best parts of ourselves. How do we talk? How do we engage? How am I showcasing myself? As we can then speak to ourselves for our authentic selves. Because I think that's what Thurman really got to, this depth of thought and spirituality, man, that allowed us to see, sense, and understand all aspects of who we were without being monetized. And I think it's very, very interesting. I really wish, you know, people like him and Du Bois and Booker, you know, and Hughes even were still around to even have conversations with about this stuff. So I'm sure it'd be really interesting to see the ways that they would apply it and see it. Because absolutely, I think it in the end, it leads to, and his goal, Black Liberation's goal, is the flourishing of all of God's people, made in the image of God, the Imago Dei, made in the image of God. And I believe this is allowing us to do that if we use it correctly. Now, the problem is we're creatures of sin. And so because we're creatures of sin, we're going to use things for our own purposes when it could be, you know, for human flourishing. And I think that's the part that gets difficult.
So much of what you're doing is very applied. And two of the words that I hear you use a lot are fun and how, right? Because you're involved in that work of actually solving problems for the church and with the church. And so to explore that in your book, The Church of AI, what are some of the key challenges and opportunities you see for religious institutions as they navigate the integration of AI technologies?
I think, man, one of the major things, I mean, beyond the generals of age and money, is fear. To me, fear-mongering, like anything that we don't understand, demonize, right? And whether we actually call it a devil is something completely different to different traditions. But what I've experienced from different pastors and leaders is that what we don't understand, we throw away, we demonize. Like, you know, what's wrong with it? It's got to be from the devil. It's sending us to hell. The world is falling apart. And I remember one of the greatest preachers of our generation, Samuel D. Proctor. He preached at Duke back in the 80s, and he destroyed the internet. I mean, just the internet's going to be the worst thing for churches. I don't know if you've ever heard it. Yeah, it's the worst thing for churches. It's the worst thing that's coming out, and it's not going to help our churches. Stay on paper, stay in your ledger. And I remember listening to, like, man, Proctor, I loved you, but you were wrong there, man, right? And it was so prophetic, and I respect him, and I read his work, and I preach with Proctor's method. Like, I respect Samuel D. Proctor, but it was amazing to hear him just eviscerate the internet, right? Like, it's just the worst thing coming out. And so then I personally, man, I remember when I was young enough. So when 2008, when I talked about college, man, Twitter was just coming out, and I started using Twitter and Facebook in churches, and we had hashtag days and Faithbook Sundays and all that type of stuff. And there was a pastor in my hometown, Milwaukee, who thought I was crazy. Like, you know, we're not going to use this stuff, or this stuff is bad, it's going to die soon, all that type of stuff. And it was funny because when COVID happened, I wanted to call him so bad and like slap him, right? Like, it was just like, now I'm a genius, man, right? Because it was just like, now you want the hashtags, right? And then live stream, I remember in the 2015, 2016, I was in my first church, and we put an iPad up. It was cheap, man. It was in the balcony. Nobody saw it. It was just an iPad to stream our services. People thought I was crazy. Like, how in the world are you using this iPad? And we're not going to live stream. Nobody cares about live stream. And then COVID hit. And it was just like, thank God we had the live show, we got the cameras, and we invested cheap cameras, right? And then so now it's the same way kind of with AI. Well, it is the crazy, Pastor Justin. What are we going to do with chatbots? Is it ethical? Is it this? Is it that? And that's been the main thing, where it's just we're afraid. But I think we have to, with the church, I think it's the fear, it's ethics, it's question of ethics. And I always challenge people, like, we're creatures of sin. What makes AI unethical is that it's made from humans. We make it unethical. And so either we're going to use it correctly, or as we build it, we're going to build it correctly. Or because it's human, we're creatures of sin. We're born in sin. We're shaped in iniquity, that we have a choice to trust God's divine operation in our lives when we do this, or it's going to fall apart. And that's on us. And that's the part where we're trusting people to love our neighbors as ourselves, and prayerfully that we have enough people that are going to do the same thing. And so that's been the main things, man. I mean, outside of, like I said, money and adoption rates and job replacement, you know, all my members are going to lose their jobs. And I pastor a black church. I work with a lot of black churches. So a lot of our churches are not very wealthy. And so we have a lot of members that do a lot of service work and members who do a lot of jobs that are very hourly. And so seeing that their basic jobs are being replaced or learned by robotics is scary. But then I also challenge people. So things like it gives us as churches an opportunity to think not just outside of the box, but beyond ourselves. And that is, for example, my church, we're starting an innovation lab. We're going to teach, it's called Black Girls Who Code, Black Boys Who Code. And we're going to teach older and younger people how to code. It's giving us an opportunity to reach out to universities, to engage with the demographic of our community that we've never seen before in order for us to sustain this work. Now, a lot of pastors aren't thinking that way because I still talk to pastors and leaders who are just getting onto Facebook ads. And I'm like, you are 10 years behind. But, you know, it's just like, you're still getting there. But I know I'm not the only one. And there's other people out there, man, who are also working to ensure that we think, I don't like boxes, but we think beyond ourselves and think beyond our prejudices, our biases, and our judgment to then begin to envision a future of how do we thrive in this? Because I can only imagine, like, what if we were working together when all these churches were on TV to think about how we make that accessible on places like Vimeo and YouTube back in 2010? When cameras were expensive, what if we worked together on it instead of demonizing it and saying, we better, if you can't see Jesus unless you're in church, and then COVID hits, and then we have to shift our theology and make up stories to be like, well, Jesus in the home too, because we got bills to pay, right? So it was survivalist and not engaging.
I also love this posture of not demonizing things and the examples of when we've done it before. And I'm really glad that the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference, which I love and I'm a big fan of, has a website.
Yeah, that's what's so funny, man. Like, honestly, I'll have to send you the sermon, but it's on Duke's podcast. And Proctor, like I said, back in the 80s, man, he was destroying, like, this is the worst thing that's coming. The internet is not going to help us. It's going to kill our communication and it's fear, right? I mean, I get it. And it's, he just was, he had the stage and the gall to say it. And I know he wasn't the one who felt it, but, you know, same people felt about phones and cars and all of it. It's just, you know, I joke with my church, don't be surprised when there's a robot usher, you know, and I'm not even kidding, because we've reached out and they're just too expensive right now. But once they're affordable, if you don't think that because they're going to check our temperatures, they're going to help people with seating, they're going to help people with spacing, help people with parking, and see things we can't see, and then help you give, you know, scanning. I mean, there's so many things that we can automate so that I can take the resources we're putting to one thing and put it towards our community. We've been able, because of the work we've done, man, instead of hiring another staff person in my church, we've been able to invest money into. So for example, next year, we're sponsoring proms for two schools. We're taking the money I would put in an $80,000 job and put it into two $20,000 proms. Like, to me, that impacts souls, lives, the reach of the gospel, because now we've decentralized one brain and said, how do we do our automation, our communication, our follow-up, our guest automation, you know, our financial data? How do we get that to be automated and generalized to give us insights we don't see? Instead of hiring one person, we now are able to help hundreds of people. And that's the way, not just to make excuses for things, but that's the ways that I've been also teaching and coaching others of, I want us to think beyond ourselves. And now that impact is going to increase our resources to help our community. And then we can hire two or three people to sustain it. So all of that. I could talk about this for ages, man.
Think this, I really think, is crucial to get in. And I think you've really hit on what I consider to be the key for ethical AI integration right now, which is just assume that you can at least double the productivity of some things that you're doing, if there's any sort of knowledge. Yeah. And a lot of times we're seeing fivefold increases and things like that. What do you want to do with that extra capacity? And I think for a lot of people, that's actually the hard question to answer. And if you can't, then you really are almost certainly going to end up just scaling back and doing less, because we just have to do more with this technology. We have to identify need gaps. We have to expand into new areas, or else we'll just kind of end up shrinking, I think, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. If not, man, we're going to get consumed thinking that all generative AI can do is make cat videos and, you know, make exploding toilets, compared to this is giving me a chance to get, like, I've been able to get demographic insight on my community in terms of who's Christian, who's not, what's the best time to put things up, where are the best community events to go to, how to engage with leaders, how to help people be educated on voting. We've been able to utilize this, man, like I said, in terms of production, to where I'm able to finish my sermons a lot earlier and have access to more commentaries, to more work, so that I can be in the hospital, be at high schools, be at elementary schools, and be with my family more. And nothing, and only thing that's happening is our organization's getting better. My team, for example, I mandate my professional team to spend 30 minutes a day using some sort of artificial intelligence tool. Because innovation is not an option, it's a requirement in our office, right? And so because it's a requirement, I mandate them to try something. I don't care if it's from ChatGPT to, you know, go make a song on Suno, whatever it is, I want you to expand. If nothing else, I'm keeping you creative. And so now, man, it's allowed them to expand their writing and their communication and enhance it. And then even last week, as we record this, so prior to this recording, I'm in a meeting, man, with a bunch of 70-year-olds. I told them, bring their computers so I can show them how to use it. And we took the fear off. Even they were more productive. Like, they came to church on Sunday, like, Pastor, thank you for the IA thing. I don't know what I'm doing, but it is so cool. And it's amazing when we get past the fear and begin to open up. And I get thinking, like I said, about Afrofuturism and Thurman, human flourishing. We cast a vision that's bigger than ourselves. Like, literally, man, think about it. The coming of Jesus was just a crazy little vision that made no sense to anybody. I'm not comparing AI to Jesus, but it's just like, hey, the world's going to be saved with a baby. But look at the star. What the heck? Like, it's just like, what? But it's like, when you see that God can use anything and anybody to get his work and will done through people who are willing to trust him. I think that's what challenges us in our faith walk, man. So getting back to the beginning, you talk about even Francis, man, like, absolutely. Like, it's fun. Shiggle. It's fun. it's just a whole lot of fun to trust God, man, because God does some amazing, weird, interesting things in the process.
In terms of other aspects of how you are integrating AI in ways that are fun and effective in your church, I'd love to hear any other details, things that are insights, tips. I love the idea of requiring your team to use it some. And even more of that how stuff, I think, would be great to expand on.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have on my personal website, and there's also a church website, I have a clone. And so people are able to talk to me. So it updates automatically with our YouTube video. So as soon as church is done, it updates automatically with the video for the week. And I use this app called Delphi, and it automatically allows people to have conversations with me after worship is over. So people that go into it, they ask you for prayer, they ask you for engagement, they ask a lot of questions. And we let them know that it's a clone, it's not really me, but it has so much information about me that's as if they're talking to me. The same thing with like our member follow-up and engagement. So we have an automated church funnels for people that when they click an ad or click anything or go to our website, it automatically will follow up with them, send them a voicemail, send them a video, get them a phone call. So we use it for automation in that sense. The same thing with like even our emails for our church. It's all this stuff is automated. There's some stuff I use as well for video creation. Like, I love the app Captions and CapCut. Those are just like my go-tos every single week in terms of sermon notes, sermon creation. Now they have an AI twin. So I actually have somebody who looks like me and talks like me, but just takes the quotes from our sermon, which is cool. So that's that. And that I recommend that for all the churches too. Then ChatGPT. So honestly, man, I played around with custom GPTs and built one called Pastor GPT, shameless plug, if anyone wants to play with it. And I built it using Scholar GPT and using the goal is to get you to help you write your sermon, just opposed to the promotions after. And so the goal is to not to write it for you, but to use scholarly research, recent data, recent marketing tools to help you write it, then to help you market and center your church on your sermon. So it's been a fun little GPT to play with. And then different tools like Claude and ChatGPT. I have not written a full email in God knows how long. I have Gemini built into my Gmail, and then I use it for scheduling too. So our team, we only have 2 full-time staff members. I'm in the process of hiring some more to that, man. We don't have an admin. So we use this app called Spark, and Spark is our admin. And so when you email me, you get an email back from my AI admin, and people literally came in. Somebody came to my church once asking, like, where's Spark at? I want to meet Spark. And I was like, Spark is an AI agent. And it's really funny because it's just real cool and engages and has conversations with people. So it's really dope. You know, so that's the ways that we've used it on the ground in terms of engaging with people. We've had different sessions for like collegiate students and how to help them write college applications using it. Seniors help integrate it into their phones. And they've been just working entrepreneurs and how to work. And so we've made our church, man, if there's anything I'm known for, to be the hub of innovation and the hub for engagement, so that we can engage this. And then I dedicate, so I could do a lot of work with it personally, but I've dedicated at least one sermon series a year the last 3 years to engage in new technology. So last year, I focused on crypto and what it was. This year, my focus is on AI and AI tips. And then the year before that was on just the the beginning stages, which is crazy to think, the beginning stages and how it started. Like, this is what's coming down the pipeline 2 years ago. And to think where we are now, where you can't live without it. So that's how we've integrated it. If there's a pastor or a leader who's engaging and reading this, I would highly recommend for them to think about the ways that they can engage with basic tools, even just writing tools like ChatGPT and Claude, to help them enhance their writing, to help them research, and then eventually get into the ones that can help you, you know, do follow-up social media marketing, social media campaigns. Honestly, I don't know how I would be able to live at this point without AI being a part of our team. I think it's kind of, like, even our cameras at our church, man, have AI built in where they follow us based upon tracking. Like, I think my sound guy, if I'm not mistaken, the soundboard we got has some AI infused stuff too to help EQ in the room. I mean, it's just, we have AI translation, honestly. So we have AI translation, live translation for those who speak Spanish in our church. And so as people, so it's my voice being live translated as I preach. So people who don't speak English as a second language in our church come in and it's live translation in Spanish. We've only had one language right now, but it's, I forgot all about that. But yeah, we do that, man, offer it for ESL, and it's been really dope. And it's, instead of hiring a full-time person to do all these different things, that's seven different things I'm naming, we have agents that as soon as we finish, it's uploaded, it's sent, it's connected, goes out, and then we monitor it, you know, obviously for hallucinations, but we haven't seen anything crazy. We had a couple of weird instances, but haven't seen anything crazy that wouldn't have the same level of error that a human would. So
it would be fun to talk to the Lester clone. Can you access this chat response?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, okay. I can see them all. Yeah. And so, what it'll do too, so what it does, what's cool about Delphi, man, I like Delphi, is it will send me like a monthly, like everything, if you want to move, I do monthly, a monthly response to like all the things I got. So what can help it, what can help train it, because it wants to keep training it to be more and more like you. And that's why I picture you to, like, so for me, what we do here is what I preach on Sunday is automatically put in there, the transcript, by Tuesday, it's there. And so once YouTube finishes, it goes in. So then people are able to go on our church site and have conversations with me about the sermons. Like, I preached on giving on Sunday. So people are going in there like, where's it actually say about tithing? Is it really 40%? Like, all of that. People are able to have full-fledged conversations with me. And then I can train it. And then if it doesn't have an answer, it won't make it up. It'll tell it, hey, I don't have the information. And then it'll alert me, hey, somebody asked a question. Like, somebody asked a question yesterday about how much solar power is used to power AI globally. And I have no idea. And that's nowhere found. So I love it because it doesn't make up stuff. It only speaks to what it has.
Really interesting system. And I love the way you use it to, it's part of your extended self. You're still in the loop on what this does, and the people interacting with it know that you end up seeing it and you can follow up on it, I assume. And then, so they're not shocked if you're like, actually, there's this question that you asked and I wanted to follow up in more detail, or I wanted to do
that. Absolutely.
Thank you. Really cool stuff. So many cool both why things in terms of theological reflections and how things, and I hope this is the beginning of many similar conversations to come, because I think there's a lot of pastors and others, you know, in AI and faith from a variety of faith traditions who would benefit from seeing your fun, proactive integration of technology.
Absolutely, man. Thank you so much. This is an honor. I always love doing this, and it's an honor to do this and be a part of the AI and faith family.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Stay tuned to listen to more recordings and interviews with experts from around the world. In the meantime, follow and rate our podcast on your favorite podcast platform and share with your friends. Don't forget to follow us on our social media as well. We're on LinkedIn, X, and Blue Sky. Thank you for joining us today.